Clive Jackson, thank you for joining us for this podcast. We haven't known each other that long, but I reached out to you because I was very interested to learn a bit more about the business that you founded and that you currently chair, Fly Victor. So welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and the business you've set up. And for those that don't know, give us an insight into what you do and your current role.
Okay, well, I'm the founder chairman of Victor. It's a on-demand private jet charter company. I launched it in 2011, primarily out of frustration with the private jet charter industry. As a consumer, I saw all the pitfalls, and as a tech digital entrepreneur, I thought mistakenly that, I could go and fix them all very easily and build an Uber for private jets on a global scale. So here we are, 2020, 9 years on, and Victor has become the second largest provider by transactional volume in Europe. We're all over the world. My role now is executive chairman, having executed a buyout of the company from our parent company in March of this year. In fact, on the 6th of March, which was the first day that the UK recorded its first COVID-19 death. So timing couldn't have been any better or worse, really, to execute a management-led buyout of the company. But here we are today, and our business is to provide business jets on charter for pretty much any type of mission, for any type of client, and to fly you point to point anywhere in the world.
And over those last 3 or 4 months, as we talk now, early August 2020, how has the performance of your business been in terms of those coming to your site and looking to charter a jet?
Well, if I look at the performance, in the lead up to, the 2020 planning, and the process of, pitching to, buy the company, we had already put in place a process to streamline our cost base, to look for great efficiencies across the company. Throughout the history of the of Victor, we had been loss-making. We've been in the business of scale up, and that's rapid growth, and that always, comes ahead of, your desire to reach profitability. So, at the start of this year, we'd gone into a strategic pivot to focus on profitability. So, this was all done pre-COVID. So, when COVID hit, and it hit, the day that really that we completed the transaction, we were in a good place in terms of forward planning. I'd just come back from vacation on the same day that we had to complete, and from a part in the world where they had been recording more COVID instances than in the UK. So when I walked into the office and elbow bumped most of the staff, they looked at me as if I was mad. And I walked in with, 200 pairs of surgical gloves and 50 respirator masks. And again, all the youngsters looked at me and thought, geez, what's this guy doing? So, I mean, in a way, we were kind of better prepared for it. But like every business in the world, at the end of March, things had fallen off a cliff. So for business aviation, we had seen our volume of transactions fall 90%.
Crikey.
So,
And
that was a tough thing to deal with.
when you look back to that point in early March, predominantly those people who were traveling for business were doing so regularly. These were repeat customers regularly coming back to book jets or otherwise.
Well, when you look at our customer base, it's sort of and the type of missions flown, it breaks down into leisure and, pure business, which is pure corporate. The the leisure flyer is the ultra high net worth and the mass affluent high net worth. You know, they are flying predominantly, you know, between their companies, their holiday homes, their yachts, their chalets, and it can be anywhere in the world. The corporate user is flying specifically on a business mission, you know, generally with a CFO, you know, general counsel, and, you know, various other members of his C-suite team to perform usually transactional based, you know, business. So, you know, obviously with the global lockdown, all of that stopped. And not least for private aviation, but commercial aviation stopped as well. So the airlines were even harder hit, where, you know, many just did not fly, period. And if they did, they were flying the odd repatriation or mercy mission. And, yeah, you know, for Victor, in the month of April, we flew, you know, a number of medical evacuations, key repatriations of nationals between countries, a number of emergency situations as well. And we flew in NHS emergency support teams into different parts of the world to bolster up local medical facilities and key workers that are keeping hospitals, power plants, and nuclear installations running. So that was about the only traffic we were flying in April. And beyond that, leisure was off the cards and business was off the cards.
So some of those customer sets that you described earlier, Clive, that you were flying around the world for socially critical missions, those were, including the NHS being sent abroad and some of the other examples you gave us, were those sponsored by individuals or were those by governments or companies? Who is picking up the tab for sending these people to these important places?
Well, I think the 26 NHS emergency workers that we sent down to Gibraltar, I mean, that was a government paid for solution. You know, you also get some, you know, very wealthy philanthropists who will pay for missions of that nature. And, you know, one of my friends did something very similar to that, where he flew in a huge amount of PPE, gowns, medical equipment, etc., that you know, was flown into Bras Norton, you know, the RAF base. A massive amount of equipment. Frustratingly, it sat there for weeks and weeks whilst the military, you know, the various public health authorities, etc., tried to decide who got to distribute it. But so in terms of paying for it, it varies. And certainly the ultra high net worth fundamentally makes up the vast majority of people who fly on their own aircraft. And, you know, clearly they pay for it themselves.
You talked earlier about having to pivot towards profitability. What specifically does that entail? What have you had to do to change or improve the way you run the business to make that a reality?
Well, that's a good question, and it's a very deep question, because, you know, fundamentally, when you build a digital transformation business where you look at an industry and you see how digital can transform it, you know, how you can drive significant scale and dominate on a global basis, you know, you have two big tasks. The first task is to, you know, think about a consumer brand if it's B2C. And Victor, I think, aside from NetJets, was really the first mass consumer brand in private aviation that caught the imagination of the ultra high net worth. You know, we named it Victor for the simple reason that, you know, those ultra high net worths are, you know, captains of their own universe. You know, they want to win at everything that they do, hence the name V for Victor, V for Victory. That means the same in 27 different languages, and the aviation connotation is also the alphabet, you know, V for Victor. So you're building a brand was step one. Step two is building a, you know, a digitized platform in the B2C space, which we did. And I think one of the things that clearly we and our shareholders and investors are underestimated was the cost to build a platform that also had to digitize the supply chain. So if you build a global supply chain platform, you know, it is B2B and B2C. And I'm going to give you an example, Rupert, where Deliveroo, Just Eat, you know, and Uber Eats are the same. You know, if for them to work, the providers of food have to take an automated order, handle it, process it, and transact it, and ship it. And you can't have a huge amount of human interaction in that, apart from the cooking. But the processing of that order has to be almost seamless, to the extent that, you know, you're sitting at home today. If the order is being dispatched from your nearest XYZ restaurant, you've had a digital notification, and it hasn't been someone keying that into a keyboard or a system. And certainly in the aviation industry, you know, at like any digital platform, that takes a huge amount of money to build. So you've got to build a brand, and you've got to build a digital platform. And to attract the investment to do that, because we're now talking hundreds of millions of dollars to build a global supply chain platform and build a global brand from scratch, you have to be able to present a value proposition to investors that excites them. And what excites them, and I'm going back to 2011, 12, 13, it was the prospect of exponential growth. So in the early years of Victor, we were doubling our turnover every year. I mean, clearly, as you get bigger, you know, that slows, and we sort of settled to about 40% per annum compound growth. We got into the Sunday Times top 100 fastest growing technology companies in the United Kingdom, not once, but 5 years on the trot.
When was the last year?
So that gave you an idea about delivering scale. When you pivot to profitability, it's not all about growth at any cost. It's now fundamentally stripping out all of the things that drove scale and focused on maintaining long-term client relationships that you could then focus on margin and efficiency. And that is what we've done this year in 2020, is make that pivot.
And when was the last year you had that fifth year of progressive growth?
Yes, 2019.
That was 2019. Excellent. I want to talk a little bit more as well about sustainability and what most of those listening to this will probably have thought about what you guys are doing as a sector, and perhaps what you are doing at Fly Victor to do your bit on the subject of being sustainable and carrying your costs. Tell us a bit more, Clive.
Well, I think the whole issue about the environment, climate change, and the climate emergency has really in the last 2 years been amplified by you know, the efforts of Greta Thunberg. And you know, what she's done is basically bring and raise the level of awareness above and beyond, you know, anyone else trying to address the issue of this climate emergency. I think when people think about climate change and carbon emissions, they always and look to the skies. And therefore aviation really becomes the bad boy in terms of, you know, how much it pollutes the atmosphere. I mean, the reality of it is that aviation per se probably contributes about 2% to global greenhouse gas emissions. Private aviation is a minuscule fraction of that. But private aviation is really associated with the rich, the privileged, and the wealthy. And you know, the critics look at airlines and they look at private aviation and they think, well, you know, you guys have got to do something better. And I think the issue that I've seen is that from a Victor's perspective, we're not here to dictate who should fly, when they should fly, nor how they should fly. That's consumer choice. And we live in a free world, and that should continue to exist. But I believe from a Victor perspective, we are in a really unique position, Rupert, to influence the people that sit in our planes. Now, these are the world's most influential trendsetters and opinion formers. And by and large, they're flying private because they're looking for the safety, the security aspect, the point-to-point, the privacy. But I dictated that in 2019, in July 2019, that every Victor flight from the 1st of July would be mandated with a 200% carbon offset. So that effectively means that the carbon emissions associated with that mission, two times the amount of that carbon emissions, would be sequestrated from the atmosphere, from the money that we would then apply. And that was money that Victor paid for. So effectively, we repurposed our global marketing budget to buy carbon offsets for every single one of our flights. Now, in the airline industry, most airlines, most major European airlines, offer the chance to a consumer to offset the emissions associated with your seat. If you're on a 400-seater aircraft, your contribution is a couple of pounds, if that. It might be pence. For private aviation, what we're saying is the customer has to offset the entire aircraft, because invariably they're the only people on it.
Sure.
Not do it once, but just do it twice. Not make it voluntary, let's mandate it. And by being, you know, really quite bold about mandating it and paying for it, it gave me the right to then talk to the person who sat in the back of the aircraft, the person that paid for that charter, and say to them, look, you know, this is my truth. This is what I'm doing. And you're way, way more wealthier than Victor and me. So what about you? What about you contributing? Because 2 times carbon offset, great. What about 10 times carbon offset?
Sure.
What about enough carbon offset for you to be able to buy sustainable, renewable aviation fuel that perhaps has been created from plastic? You know, that comes at a big cost. And, you know, I had no idea whether it would work a year ago. As I said, the benchmark in aviation, commercial aviation, was less than 1% of airline passengers were willing to pay a voluntary contribution. Victor mandated it and paid for it ourselves. So what I am very pleased to say is that a year on, 10% of our flyers now reach into their own pocket and top up to 400, 500, you know, to 1,000%. And I think what's really important about that is that it has created a dialogue. And that world-class CEO that is not a hired CEO, it's an owner-founder CEO or an owner-founder chairman, or the asset owner himself, he's gone back to his enterprise, his chief exec, and said, hey, what are we doing in our company? We got 7,000 employees. What are we doing? You know, if Victor can do this, why can't we? And we wanted to start that dialogue, and we wanted to say to the aviation industry, airlines and private, look, you have to be bold. You have to take a step forward. And if you want to avoid all the criticism from the environmentalists, you better do something that is totally transparent and very, very measurable.
That's a really interesting insight, and it's fantastic that you've been able to take that conversation to them. As you say, one has to now hope that they continue to discuss this both within their organization, within their peer group, and to continue writing the checks. My last question is just to ask you of any fun anecdotes, Clive, or any scenarios that you've seen over the last 3 or 4 months across your business.
Well, I think there are two things that, you know, having come through, you know, this huge challenge of, you know, not only lockdown, but, you know, the COVID-19 crisis and, you know, how that's affected the business. I think, you know, there are two aspects of it. There's the staffing aspect of it, i.e. the people that work within Victor. And, you know, fundamentally, you know, the cost and the pressure on them has been enormous. So, you know, if I can answer that first, you know, post buying back of the company, we appointed joint CEOs, who have both been with the business, James and Toby, for the last 8-9 years. And, you know, their focus and their mission was not only to get the company to profitability, but to take the company through this transition. Like most other businesses in the UK, we also went down the furlough route. So right at the beginning, I think we furloughed nearly 3/4 of all our staff. And the quarter that we kept on board were for emergency flights. But we also recognized that to put that pressure on a few members of staff still operating, you know, flight management, flight operations, and the future of the company rested, you know, on their shoulders. You had to think about their mental well-being. You had to think about how you would rotate them off active duty, perhaps back into furlough, and then take someone else off furlough in accordance with the government guidelines. So you couldn't do it every day. You had to have prescribed periods of rotation to just give them a mental break and also give someone else a chance sitting at home doing nothing to come back and play a part in the future of the company. Because again, you know, the future of the company in April, May was severely in doubt, like the future of many, many businesses in the UK. Sure. So one of the biggest things that we've tried to focus on is their mental well-being and to be able to do it in a way where it's not so intrusive. We're not just asking them the question, how are you feeling today? We're looking at their performance, we're looking at their approach, we're looking at, you know, the data science around how our business transacts. And we're looking for signs as to when we see fatigue and burnout, and then we rotate them in and out. But what I've got to say is today, which is August the 7th, we have pretty much brought every single person back from furlough now. And I think that's, you know, testimony to the leadership and the management of the company. Now, if I answer the second part, which is, you know, the customers, what's been really interesting is, you know, what constitutes, you know, the flying that we've been seeing, which is, you know, a significant pickup. You know, May was a significant uptick on April. April was pretty nothing. You know, June, we did 100% of our flights in May. And I can say that from July's perspective, we are back to pre-COVID level peak season fly.
Clive Jackson, chairman and founder of Fly Victor, thank you very much for taking this time to tell us a bit more about your business. As you say, you've clearly had some challenging times, as one would expect, but it's great to hear that things seem to be motoring again. And thank you for your time.
It's a real pleasure, Rupert, and thanks for having me.